Next, we are asked to describe limitations of monetary policy. This transmission mechanism for monetary policy, previously described, does not always produce the intended results. In particular, long-term rates may not rise and fall with short-term rates because of the effect of monetary policy changes on expected inflation. If individuals and businesses believe that a decrease in the money supply intended to reduce inflation will be successful, they will expect lower future inflation rates. Because long-term bond yields include a premium for expected inflation, long-term rates could fall, tending to increase economic growth even while the central bank has increased short-term rates in order to slow economic activity. Conversely, increasing the money supply to stimulate economic activity could lead to an increase in expected inflation rates and long-term bond yields, even as short-term rates fall. From a different perspective, monetary tightening may be viewed as too extreme, increasing the probability of a recession, making long-term bonds more attractive, and reducing long-term interest rates. If money supply growth is seen as inflationary, higher expected future asset prices will make long-term bonds relatively less attractive and will increase long-term interest rates. Bond market participants that act in this way have been called bond market vigilantes. When the central bank's policy is credible and investors believe that the inflation target rate will be maintained over time, this effect on long-term rates will be small. Another situation in which the transmission mechanism may not perform as expected is if demand for money becomes very elastic and individuals willingly hold more money even without a decrease in short-term rates. Such a situation is called a liquidity trap. Increasing growth of the money supply will not decrease short-term rates under these conditions because individuals hold the money in cash balances instead of investing in interest-bearing securities. If an economy is experiencing deflation, even though money supply policy has been expansionary, liquidity trap conditions may be present. Compared to inflation, deflation is more difficult for central banks to reverse. In a deflationary environment, monetary policy needs to be expansionary. However, the central bank is limited to reducing the nominal policy rate to zero. Once it reaches zero, the central bank has limited ability to further stimulate the economy. Another reason standard tools for increasing the money supply might not increase economic activity is that even with increasing excess reserves, banks may not be willing to lend. When what has become known as the credit bubble collapsed in 2008, banks around the world lost equity capital and desired to rebuild it. For this reason, they decreased their lending, even as money supplies were increased and short-term rates fell. With short-term rates near zero, economic growth still poor, and a real threat of deflation, central banks began a policy termed quantitative easing. In the United Kingdom, quantitative easing entailed large purchases of British government bonds in the maturity range of 3 to 5 years. The intent was to reduce interest rates to encourage borrowing and to generate excess reserves in the banking system to encourage lending. Uncertainty about the economy's future caused banks to behave quite conservatively and willingly hold more excess reserves rather than make loans. In the United States, billions of dollars were made available for the Fed to buy assets other than short-term Treasury securities. Large amounts of mortgage securities were purchased from banks to encourage bank lending and to reduce mortgage rates in an attempt to revive the housing market, which had collapsed. When this program did not have the desired effect, a second round of quantitative easing, QE2, was initiated. The Fed purchased long-term Treasury bonds in large quantities with the goal of bringing down longer-term interest rates and generating excess reserves to increase lending and economic growth. The Fed has also purchased securities with credit risk as part of its quantitative easing, improving banks' balance sheets, but perhaps just shifting risk from the private sector to the public sector. Developing economies often face additional challenges when implementing monetary policy. These include absence of liquid bond markets through which to conduct open market operations, lack of credibility resulting from prior poor track record in controlling inflation, rapid changes in the economy making it difficult to ascertain the trend rate and hence the neutral interest rate, rapid financial innovation resulting in changes in the money supply definition, and political interference resulting in a lack of central bank independence. Our review now turns from monetary policy to fiscal policy. The next LOS is to describe roles and objectives of fiscal policy. Fiscal policy refers to a government's use of spending and taxation to meet macroeconomic goals. A government budget is said to be balanced when tax revenues equal government expenditures. A budget surplus occurs when government tax revenues exceed expenditures, and a budget deficit occurs when government expenditures exceed tax revenues. In general, decreased taxes and increased government spending both increase a budget deficit, overall demand, economic growth, and employment. Increased taxes and decreased government spending decrease a budget deficit, overall demand, economic growth, and employment. Budget deficits are increased in response to recessions, and budget deficits are decreased to slow growth when inflation is too high. Keynesian economists believe that fiscal policy, through its effect on aggregate demand, can have a strong effect on economic growth when the economy is operating at less than full employment. Monetarists believe that the effect of fiscal stimulus is only temporary, and that monetary policy should be used to increase or decrease inflationary pressures over time. Monetarists do not believe that monetary policy should be used in an attempt to smooth cyclical changes in economic activity. Discretionary fiscal policy refers to the spending and taxing decisions of a national government that are intended to stabilize the economy. In contrast, automatic stabilizers are built-in fiscal devices triggered by the state of the economy. For example, during a recession, tax receipts will fall and government expenditures on unemployment insurance payments will increase. Both of these tend to increase budget deficits and are expansionary. Similarly, during boom times, higher tax revenues coupled with lower outflows for social programs tend to decrease budget deficits and are contractionary. Objectives of fiscal policy may include influencing the level of economic activity and aggregate demand, redistributing wealth and income among segments of the population, and allocating resources among economic agents and sectors in the economy. The next LOS asks us to describe tools of fiscal policy, including their advantages and disadvantages. Fiscal policy tools include spending tools and revenue tools. Spending tools include transfer payments, current spending, and capital spending. Transfer payments, also known as entitlement programs, redistribute wealth, taxing some and making payments to others. Examples include Social Security and unemployment insurance benefits. Transfer payments are not included in GDP computations. Current spending refers to government purchases of goods and services on an ongoing and routine basis. Capital spending refers to government spending on infrastructure such as roads, schools, bridges, and hospitals. Capital spending is expected to boost future productivity of the economy. Justifications offered for spending tools include the claims that they do the following: provide services such as national defense that benefit all the residents in a country, invest in infrastructure to enhance economic growth, support the country's growth and unemployment targets by directly affecting aggregate demand, provide a minimum standard of living, and subsidize investment in research and development for certain high-risk ventures consistent with future economic growth or other goals. Revenue tools include direct and indirect taxes. Direct taxes are levied on income or wealth. These include income taxes, taxes on income for national insurance, wealth taxes, estate taxes, corporate taxes, capital gains taxes, and Social Security taxes. Some progressive taxes, such as income and wealth taxes, generate revenue for wealth and income redistributing. Indirect taxes are levied on goods and services. These include sales taxes, value-added taxes, and excise taxes. Indirect taxes can be used to reduce consumption of some goods and services, such as alcohol, tobacco, or gambling. Desirable attributes of tax policy are simplicity to use and enforce, efficiency, having the least interference with market forces and not acting as a deterrent to working, fairness, which is quite subjective, but two commonly held beliefs are horizontal equality, according to which people in similar situations should pay similar taxes, and vertical equality, according to which richer people should pay more in taxes. Sufficiency, in that taxes should generate sufficient revenues to meet the spending needs of the government. Advantages of fiscal policy tools are that social policies such as discouraging tobacco use can be implemented very quickly via indirect taxes, and quick implementation of indirect taxes also means that government revenues can be increased without significant additional costs. Disadvantages of fiscal policy tools are that direct taxes, transfer payments, and capital spending take time to implement, delaying the impact of fiscal policy. The economy may have recovered by the time its impact is felt. Announcing a change in fiscal policy may have significant effects on expectations. For example, an announcement of future increase in taxes may immediately reduce current consumption, rapidly producing the desired goal of reducing aggregate demand. Note that not all fiscal policy tools affect economic activity equally. Spending tools are most effective in increasing aggregate demand. Tax reductions are somewhat less effective, as people may not spend the entire amount of the tax savings. Tax reductions for those with low incomes will be more effective in increasing aggregate demand, as those with lower incomes tend to spend a larger proportion of income on consumption. That is, they save a smaller proportion of income and have a higher marginal propensity to consume. Changes in government spending have magnified effects on aggregate demand because those whose incomes increase from increased government spending will in turn increase their spending, which increases the incomes and spending of others. The magnitude of the multiplier effect depends on the tax rate and on the marginal propensity to consume. To understand the calculation of the multiplier effect, consider an increase in government spending of $100 when the marginal propensity to consume is 80% and the tax rate is 25%. The increase in spending increases incomes by $100, but $25 of that will be paid in taxes. Disposable income is equal to income after taxes, so disposable income increases by $75. With a marginal propensity to consume of 80%, additional spending by those who receive the original $100 increase is 80% of $75, which is $60. This additional spending will increase others' incomes by $60 and disposable incomes by 75% of $60, or $45, from which they will spend 80% of $45, or $36. Because each iteration of this process reduces the amount of additional spending, the effect reaches a limit. The fiscal multiplier determines the potential increase in aggregate demand resulting from an increase in government spending. The fiscal multiplier equals 1 divided by the quantity 1 minus the marginal propensity to consume times the quantity 1 minus the tax rate. Here, with a tax rate of 25%, and a marginal propensity to consume of 80%, the fiscal multiplier is 2.5, and the increase of $100 in government spending has the potential to increase aggregate demand by $250. The fiscal multiplier is inversely related to the tax rate and directly related to the marginal propensity to consume. To balance the budget, the government could increase taxes by $100 to just offset a $100 increase in spending. Changes in taxes also have a magnified effect on aggregate demand. An increase in taxes will decrease disposable income and consumption expenditures, thereby decreasing aggregate demand. The initial decrease in spending from a tax increase of $100 is 100 times the marginal propensity to consume, or $80 in our example. Beyond that, the multiplier effect is the same as we described for a direct increase in government spending, and the overall decrease in aggregate demand for a $100 tax increase is $100 times the marginal propensity to consume times the fiscal multiplier, or, for our example, $200. Combining the total increase in aggregate demand from a $100 increase in government spending with the total decrease in aggregate demand from a $100 tax increase shows that the net effect on aggregate demand of both is an increase of $50. So we can say that the balanced budget multiplier is positive. Increases in the current deficit mean greater taxes in the future. To maintain their preferred pattern of consumption over time, taxpayers may increase current savings and reduce current consumption to offset the expected cost of higher future taxes. If taxpayers reduce current consumption and increase current savings by just enough to repay the principal and interest on the debt the government issued to fund the increased deficit, there is no effect on aggregate demand. This is known as Ricardian equivalence, after economist David Ricardo. If taxpayers underestimate their future liability for servicing and repaying the debt, so that aggregate demand is increased by equal spending and tax increases, Ricardian equivalence does not hold. Whether it does is an open question.